Hello, happy new year and welcome to episode 10 of the Senior Podcast. This is our first episode of 2025 and you may have noticed a wee change with the music. We are trying just to see what having a wee bit more of an upbeat introduction will be like and hopefully set the tone for this upcoming year. In this episode, we speak to Dr. Zara Gladman, who is a public and community engagement manager at the University of Glasgow while serving as a comedian at the same time. You may know her as the West End Mum on many social media platforms. In this episode, we talk about life as a comedian, relations to science, how we can be involved in public engagement, and other interesting things to talk about from someone who's had such a varied and continuously varying pathway.
Dr. Zara Gladman has a strong background in science, specifically in marine biology. She studied zoology at the University of Glasgow and later pursued a PhD focusing on the impact of non-native North American signal crayfish on Scotland's waterways. Her research involves studying these invasive species and their effects on local ecosystems. It was during her PhD studies that Zara first ventured into comedy, participating in a stand-up comedy night for scientists called Bright Club. This experience sparked her interest in comedy, leading her to a successful career in the field.
Hello, Zara. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm feeling ready for Christmas, even though it's November, but I'm ready.
I'm disappointed that they've not got the big, huge tree up yet in the Ark.
Yeah, where is it? Come on.
I know. Well, hopefully, as December's approaching, we'll have it up soon. It's likely that this episode will go out in January.
Oh, let's not talk about Christmas
so
then.
Christmas. Forget did you have that. A good Christmas?
I had a great Christmas. Yeah. It wasn't long enough.
It seems like it went fast in a second.
Yeah, really did.
Well, you're a woman of many talents and you have a very interesting career. And I was wondering if you could tell us a wee bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's been a non-traditional journey. So I started off with a PhD, like you say, studying these invasive crayfish. So I did that at Glasgow. I was looking at how these species were impacting native biodiversity in Scotland. So I spent a lot of time wading through rivers, collecting samples, trapping them, tracking them. And I had a great time. But then I realized kind of towards the end of my PhD that the bits of the research that I really enjoyed were the bits that involved communicating with other people, public engagement, teaching, outreach, that sort of thing. So then that led me to pursue that. And then I worked for Glasgow Science Festival for 7 years. And I got involved in comedy as well, which I'm still doing. So yeah, it's been a bit of everything along the way.
That's very interesting. And speaking about everything that you've done, how do you think your scientific background influences your approach to comedy and what you do now?
Well, I think I do take a scientific approach to comedy. I do think that on a very basic level, I think there you can break jokes down into a formula. And actually, the first time I did comedy, it was about the crayfish that I was studying. So that was my route into comedy in the first place. And for that, I ended up getting involved with a night called Bright Club, which is a comedy night where academics do comedy about their research. I went to a meeting. I was given a book called How to Be a Great Stand-Up, told to read a couple of chapters, which I did, and then I had to go away and write jokes. And in that book, I learned about things like the rule of three and different tricks that you can apply when you're constructing a joke. So it is quite logical and rational in how you put together comedy. But also, I think a parallel is how you experiment, and you don't know until you do it whether an experiment's going to work or whether a joke's going to work. And it's the constant trial and error that gets you where you want to be ultimately. Also, I love spreadsheets. And when I was putting together my first comedy hour, I literally did have an Excel spreadsheet where I divided my whole hour into sections that had timings. And, you know, that was the approach I took, which I'm pretty sure not all comedians will take. But that's how my brain works. So.
That's brilliant. I love that so much. That's something that, you know, working out what's right for your audience and everything, I can imagine that's, as you say, you know, trial and error. There's no real knowing of what's going to happen. And I can imagine that's really daunting as well.
It is daunting, especially if you don't do it very often. But the more you do it, the less scary it becomes. And it's probably similar when you're doing science as well. You just get used to failing.
Yeah.
And, you know, failing's actually learning, mm-hmm. I think.
I don't want to make this like a negative thing, but is there like a, that you can look back on now as a funny thing where something comedy-wise maybe didn't go quite to plan?
Yeah, well, I had a gig, early on this year, where I was given 5 minutes. It was part of a kind of variety night. All of the acts were doing normal stand-up comedy sets, so like boom, 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 cracking jokes. That was the vibe. But for some reason, I thought, okay, I'm gonna try some character comedy as part of this stand-up night. And I did it. And I think I just sort of assumed that people would understand that I was doing a character, but people were very confused. They were looking at me like, is this a real person? Why is she talking like that? And it wasn't a total disaster, but it wasn't what I was expecting, because I'd done that same material as part of an hour-long character comedy show, and it worked very, very well. So that was definitely a learning experience about understanding the context in which you're working and the audience and their familiarity or not with your character and your material.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I imagine it's also something that you have to kind of live through to fully grasp. And it's kind of perfectly leads on to something I want to ask you, because we're kind of fans, because this is our first time we've had like a celebrity on the podcast.
We were very excited for this episode.
Oh, stop.
Yes, definitely. Especially because obviously you're the West End mum.
Mm.
And also my genuine favourite, the Rat Lady.
The Rat, yes.
It's one of my absolute favourite things. It brings me so much joy and it makes me laugh so much. And I don't know why. It's just so wonderful.
I don't know how it would translate to a podcast other than sort of gnashing noises that might not be very nice to listen to. So I suggest people go and watch it to understand.
Absolutely watch it. But in that same kind of realm of things, your social media is viral. You get a lot of views. And it's just that, what about that do you think resonates with people?
I think it comes down to telling a truth about something that everyone's thinking but nobody has said, and people like seeing themselves reflected back. So everybody knows, or everyone who lives in the West End of Glasgow or goes to Glasgow University has met a West End mum character. So I think it's just seeing something you recognise, and that's maybe why it's funny, it's relatable. The rat one is more of a mystery. Maybe it's the kind of element of surprise. But also I think maybe there is a relatability, because for me, the rat, I quite often would do it to my boyfriend or to my friends just for fun, to entertain myself, like just sort of attacking, you know, gnashing your teeth in someone's face is quite fun to do. And I think other people probably do that as well. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think pretending you're a goblin, all of that kind of stuff is just part of a relationship.
Everybody does it.
Yeah.
Everybody does it. And my favourite thing also, I think specifically, sorry, I'm talking back about the rat one, is how there's always really specific situations. I like that, you know, like in my head, all I hear for the past 5 minutes is rat on a podcast. All the time. I can see it and it just makes me laugh because it's relatable in the most unrelatable way, I think.
I would love a rat podcast where you've got rats chewing the fat.
It would be brilliant.
Yeah, I would listen.
It would be amazing. I feel like there'd be like a section every week on what they found in the bin.
Mm. Yeah.
It'd be the best.
I think there's mileage.
Yeah. Maybe it's your next series.
Or perhaps you could do a rat special in the Ark. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, are there rats in the building already?
You're talking to one right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. How many secret rats are out there? That's the question.
I said about 12.
12?
Yeah.
That's a very specific
We all have
number.
A it's hidden like one whole, inside of us.
The disciples. Your disciples.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pied Piper vibes.
Exactly.
There's
a lot of
always
food.
Leftover foods at all these conferences and events and stuff. So it's kind of a rat haven.
That actually, it does make sense, because
the spirit
people
of rat
run down the stairs.
They do. They scurry.
the people above us on the floor above, sometimes you can stand, genuinely you can stand near the stairs and you hear them thundering down to run to get the food.
You can hear them gnashing away.
Yeah.
We have a special group chat.
We do.
Just for the food rounds downstairs.
Just for food.
Whoa.
We, as soon as like we get the email like, hi everyone, there's some leftover food, we send an alarm in the group chat.
Oh my God, what is the alarm?
Just an emoji. That's the right red alarm, but that's what it's used for.
Right.
Maybe we should change it to rats.
It could be a rat now. Our group chat is free food scavengers.
Okay. So well, there we go.
We're already the rats.
This is the rattiest place on campus, turns out.
Officially.
That is brilliant. I love the characters that you do as well. But to go outside of the viral aspect and your comedy side, can you tell us about your role as a public community engagement manager at the university, and how do you do it? What events do you organize, and how do you ensure they're both informative and entertaining?
Yeah, of course. So my job is public and community engagement manager. So what that means is I support our researchers, our staff and our students to share what they do with the public, hopefully in an accessible way and, like you say, an engaging way. So I do that in a number of different ways. Quite often I'll have meetings with researchers to chat about their research, to think about how they, you know, who might be interested, which communities in particular they want to work with or share their work with. I do training workshops, thinking about how we can communicate more accessibly. And I also organise a festival called the Explorathon Festival that happens every September, where lots of people get involved from across the uni and they share their research through big family festivals, which is a lot of fun. And obviously you've been involved as well, which is great.
We love, obviously, because of the podcast as well, doing the kind of outreach side of things. And the Explorathon was really fun.
It was really lovely chatting to families and kids and delivering some piece of what we do in the lab.
Yeah, and I think that because obviously you arrange these things and offer support throughout, I think that one of the things we did in our first year of the outreach of activities is learning that balance between informative for a lay audience whilst being entertaining. And I think the way to do it is just simple.
Yes, yes, your activity was very colourful. And if you're trying to engage kids, they love that. And you're right, I think simplicity is key. I think sometimes people think it has to be something really big and complicated that they present to the public. But it can be something as simple as bringing along a bit of kit that you do use in the lab, or, you know, a really simple demonstration of something. Colouring in, you know, that, like related to your topic. It doesn't need to be complex at all, and you also learn by doing what is working and what's not, and you can adapt.
Definitely. And I guess on that front, I wanted to ask how, for people that are wanting to get involved in public engagement and these outreach activities, what is the kind of advice or approaches you think are best to take in terms of like delivering activity but also maybe finding activity?
I think my first bit of advice, if you're brand new to it, is to piggyback on the existing festivals and projects and networks that are already going on in the city, rather than starting from scratch to organise your own event, because that is really difficult. It's a lot of work. Chances are, if you are a researcher, you're quite time poor. So lean on other people, you know, take part in things like the Glasgow Science Festival or the Explorathon or the Being Human Festival, or all of these different things. And then you're part of a bigger event that is already marketed. They bring the audience in, etc. And then another bit of advice would be to think as deeply as you can about which community it is that you want to engage in particular. So is it children? If so, what age are you aiming for? Is it adults? Is it a specific special interest group? Is it teachers? Is it professionals? Whoever it is will depend on your research topic, probably. It'll depend on your interests. And another bit of advice would be to just like experiment and try engaging different audiences. You know, when I was doing my PhD, I did volunteering in high schools, but I also, like I said, got involved in this comedy night where you're engaging with adults and with comedians, which is was a completely different style to working with young kids. And I also, as well as doing verbal engagement and talking to people, tried to practice my written communication. You know, I blogged, I tried podcasting as well. So don't be shy, just try things and see what you like, see what you're good at. And the more you do it, the easier it'll be to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah. And well, I was just wondering if I could pick up on something very quickly before we move on. One of the more recent previous podcasts we've had, we spoke a wee bit more about the impact of your work, but how you personally feel that. And I, because again, you're so involved with the community, what kind of impact do you feel that has for you?
I mean, I guess public engagement has had a huge impact on me because it's led to the career that I'm in. And I think doing public engagement, first of all, you build all these skills that you wouldn't necessarily get from just sticking to your pure research. You learn how to communicate better with people outside of your field. You learn how to build partnerships and collaborate better. Organisational skills. So I started running a comedy night, the Bright Club in Glasgow, and I learned basic things around marketing and comms, or, you know, liaising with comedians, booking them, training. I got involved in training researchers to participate. So the impact, I think, is the soft skills that you develop through doing it. But also on a personal level, you end up building relationships, you make friends. So there's the kind of softer, fuzzy impact, as well as just that positive feeling that you're hopefully doing something positive in society, trying to make research accessible to more people that wouldn't access it otherwise, which makes you feel good.
I think it's really inspiring that you feel this way and that you're willing to help people, but also learn about new things yourself. As a public engagement manager and a recovering scientist, how do you see the role of humor and comedy in science communication and what you do day to day as an event manager?
Well, I think humor is a big leveler. I think it humanizes us all. And I think, I don't know, maybe when you're early on in your career and you're maybe a little bit nervous and insecure and you want to take your PhD really seriously, the idea of cracking a joke in a lecture isn't something that you would consider. But then you'll go and see a legendary professor giving a talk, and they'll make a joke. And they might make a joke right at the start, and it just relaxes people. It makes it clear that we are all humans, that we're all the same. It kind of breaks down those hierarchies. And I think when you remove all of that kind of nonsense about hierarchy and all of that, it just makes it so much easier to engage with people and to feel relaxed. And yeah, I'm all for it. And also, if you do try stand-up comedy at any point, then the next time you have to present at a conference in front of lots of people, it's a doddle. You won't have a problem because, you know, the first time you do stand-up, it is scary.
It's really good advice. I don't think that's something that people would think of, but really interesting to hear. I suppose then there's so many links between, as you've just said, you know, there's that presenting, okay, for different audiences in a different style, but the core skills are still very similar. It's kind of a performance. You have to deliver your work. You have to, in public engagement settings, deliver what you're trying to spread information for to different audiences. So I was just wondering what maybe between your transition of career, what kind of challenges you've faced, if any?
I think I've been quite lucky in that when I was doing my PhD, I had supervisors that were super supportive of me doing public engagement. But I know that for some people, an obstacle is the attitude that you should be focusing 100% on your research. And, you know, it's just a kind of add on if you've got time. But I was really fortunate, and my professors who I worked with could see the value of engagement, and they could see that I saw this as a career path as well. But I guess time is always an obstacle. And that is something that I still struggle with sometimes, trying to balance my public engagement job with comedy. But I think just being quite strict with your time, and you know, I wanted to move into a professional services job rather than stay in research, because I wanted a 9-to-5 job that was really time bound, so that I had a good work-life balance. And I was able to do that. Obviously, there's weekend work and out-of-hours work occasionally if you're doing public engagement. But for the most part, I do a 9-to-5. And I have protected that time in the evenings to do comedy. And if I hadn't protected my time in that way, I wouldn't have been able to do both. So balancing your time has probably been the biggest challenge for me. But I'm also conscious that I'm privileged in that I don't have kids. I don't have care commitments. I'm able to, you know, I have more time than other people potentially that's allowed me to do that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other challenges in transitioning.
Working a crowd.
Yeah. I guess like a challenge that you would find in doing your research that I've already mentioned is kind of a challenge that a comedian faces is failing and being comfortable with failing and having the confidence to try new things and see if they work or not. So that's definitely a parallel.
Do you find that comedians have a very similar kind of personality type? Or because I know in the lab, we're all quite similar. Mm. You know, the lab is very much a bubble of we are lab people. We know how each other think most of the time. And then, you know, you're working on something small and you go home. It's like, oh, today I managed to get this molecular pathway to work. And it means kind of nothing to anybody else. Is there also that kind of similarity in terms of getting the right headspace community in comedy as well?
I think, you know, comedians are often massive geeks. They take comedy very seriously. They are very obsessive about the comedy that they do. So that's definitely, you know, the academics I know are geeks as well. They're passionate about their topic. Comedians are very passionate about comedy. Maybe one sort of slightly negative parallel is ego. So there's definitely a lot of ego in academia that you will come up against difficult characters. And that definitely exists in comedy as well. In the kind of live circuit, you know, there's always going to be that as an issue. Gender as well, probably. Depending on the discipline, I suppose, you know, in engineering, something like 15% of engineers are women. In comedy, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's definitely a heavily male-dominated culture. So that is a kind of unfortunate parallel, although I think things are improving. And, you know, there's in universities now, there's this big push around research culture and how we actually try and start to pick apart some of these issues and make it a more equitable place. In comedy, there are similar movements, but there's still a long way to go. There's some individual initiatives that are really brilliant in comedy. Like there's a night at the Stand called Material Girl that's run by two women comedians, and they book all women lineups, and it's a wonderful atmosphere, really good vibes. It's a great night out. I'd recommend it. And I'm sure that there are so many women in STEM initiatives, you know, that are also just trying to address the balance, but probably just like gender, diversity, disability, representation, there's issues, parallel issues in academia and in comedy that are going on. Funnily enough, in public engagement is very heavily biased towards women. When you look around at conferences, public engagement conferences, it's mostly women that are doing the majority of the public engagement or are occupying these professional roles. So, and it's also an undervalued thing. So I'm sure that's not a coincidence as well. Not to be depressing.
No. It's all really interesting.
And very good insights.
Especially because, again, you are a woman in comedy and a woman in science and public engagement. So, you know, you've had that point of view and you can see where maybe some areas are beginning to improve, others are lacking in more so. And I think it's important to address these things as well.
I mean, in public engagement, even 10, 15 years ago, if you went to an event and there was an all-male panel, that wouldn't look unusual. And people, I think, didn't really think about it as much. Whereas nowadays, if I was organising an event, you want to make sure that you have a diversity of panellists on board and represented there. So I think it's definitely more in our consciousness now. But even 15 years ago, things were...
I think it's really cool that now that you're being in the role at the university and doing the comedy and being a scientist, you're bringing this change, and it's very inspiring to hear that.
We have two crazier questions to end on.
On a lighter note. So one of the most loved questions on our podcast that we always ask our guests, what piece of love equipment do you think represents you?
So I did think about this, and I'm going to rep for the ecologists and choose a piece of field equipment rather than laboratory equipment, if that is allowed.
Totally allowed.
And I'm going to go with a pond net, because I have dipped into lots of different things, and I like the idea of dipping into something and discovering something that you didn't expect, and then it taking you in a different direction. Because I feel like throughout my career, I've been able to dip into things like research, like comedy, like teaching, podcasting, writing, or whatever. And I want to keep doing that. I don't like the idea that you are a scientist, or you are a writer, or you are XYZ. I think you can be many things, and that's what I've kind of valued in my career.
I love the broadening of the equipment as well. I think that's perfect. I really, listening to your answer, I really like actually asking that question, because it's kind of abstract and it gives a good answer. Like, I love your explanation. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, and in the future we're hoping to bring more external speakers, so it would be interesting to hear.
So you're paving the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
branched out. Absolutely. Also, pond dipping is fun, and I'm sure it probably got me interested in zoology in the first place in the local park. So it's a cute activity to do.
The crayfish were waiting for you.
They were.
Okay, well then our final question is, what five words would you use to describe yourself or your career?
I'm going to go with improv. Varied, creative, and people-centered. People-centered, I don't know if that counts as one word, but it's got a hyphen. Let's go with that. I've forgotten already what I said. So improvised, improv.
Varied.
Varied, creative, people-centered.
Excellent. I think that's wonderful.
Well, cool.
I hope you've enjoyed this experience, and it's been okay.
Thank you so much
for coming. It's been lovely. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. Thank you so much.